This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. About 25 years ago, author Alan Gerganus created the mythic world of Falls, North Carolina. He's so familiar with Falls that decades later he can trace a map of the town in his mind. In his latest book, Local Souls, Alan advances Falls into the 21st century and takes the town into a time of looser notions of family, more complex understandings of sexuality, and, of course, high-speed internet. Local Souls is broken up into three novellas, each exploring themes of love and community in the modern age. Alan Gerganus joins us now to talk about Local Souls. Alan, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. It's always a pleasure.
You know, if I were to have an author on the show to talk about his latest fiction and say that in this story, a prominent doctor decapitates a prominent banker, impregnates his 14-year-old daughter, who is forced to give up her son for adoption, I would be accused of giving away the ending. In your book, I've given away the first 15 pages. This is a really exciting piece of work that and focused on little old Falls, a small town where all of this exciting stuff happens. So tell us more about Fear Not, which is the first of the novellas.
Thank you. Yeah, the people who live in the Northeast sometimes marvel that so much happens in my book, but they haven't lived in the same little towns I've lived in. It's busy. We keep busy, busy watching other people be busy and imagining what they're doing. Fear Not is the tale of a girl who gives up her baby for adoption, pregnant out of wedlock like a lot of girls in my high school. And in those times, when before it became chic to keep your baby and just say, here's my baby, I want one and here it is. These girls were shamed by the church and shamed by their family into going to an institution in Newport News, and the baby was given away while they were knocked out, anesthetized. They never were told the gender of the child, and they lost the baby. And a lot of these women have told me, and I've talked to many of them, that their whole life was dedicated to finding the child and trying to explain to the child. And I found this an extremely beautiful and moving way of investigating the complexities of parenthood, how when you give something to the universe, you have to know what happened to it. And it has a kind of wild, happy ending. It's very unpredictable. But it was very powerful to write the story, and I felt I learned a huge amount, and I've gotten responses from women to whom this happened who tell me that I got some things right.
It is a very powerful story, and I had to say when I got to about page 15 or maybe 19 by the time that description ended, I was saying, Gerganus, where are you going now? And it is shocking and wonderful how you were able to take all of that action and really keep it going in the first place, but also probe all of those themes. Not only did she give the child back to the universe, but you make it clear that it was a gift from the universe. And when it might be so easy for us to judge this man and what he did and this girl and her choices, you have to love them all through it all.
I think it's essential to love your characters. And that means loving them the way we love our loved ones when they make terrible mistakes, when our kids get involved with drugs in the wrong crowd, when the man that we've loved for 50 years comes in and says, my secretary is attractive, you're not, I'm out of here. Love doesn't just stop and start, it continues. And one of the great lessons, I think, in literature is how many varieties of it there really are, how many varieties of erotic expression there are. This is a book full of people who have sexual lives, including young kids and old people. And that plays to what I think is central to understanding human beings. Walt Whitman says, we are unerringly lost without the sexual texture of things. I love how sexual and texture rhyme, and they're rubbing up against each other. Don't kid yourself. And I've tried to apply that to my own characters.
And what happens to us when we try to repress these or pretend that they are somehow controlled and governed by the rules of small town living. And I'm tempted to say that this is a book about clearly identity, right? I mean, if you're trying to find your child and your child is trying to find you, but it's more than that. It's about who's in control of my life. Who are, so much is happening to me. And yet I have a life. I'm doing things that are of my own will.
That's right. This character goes on, marries, has two daughters of her own, lives a very respectable upper middle class life, and yet there's this tremendous hollow in her. And every time she goes to a children's swimming pool, she's looking for the kid that would be the age of her kid. And I think this is a, there's a kind of missingness that we all register. I mean, we all feel that we were one of a pair of twins in utero and that we're still looking for our other half.
And I like that when she goes to the clothes store with her two daughters, who she's living with and had a marriage, you know, to a husband here, the two daughters, buying them clothes and always looking at the clothes that she believes her child might have worn now, her missing child. Would you read for us from Fear Not, one of the three novellas in Alan Gerganus's latest Local Souls?
Yes, this is the mother in question leading a book group. Book club members never guessed she'd had a baby at 15, one given away forever. They believed their chairlady's girlhood must have included serious daily study, unlike theirs. In this set, where dental assistants and surgeons' receptionists had married their till recently married bosses, having a master's degree in Russian lit lent some glamour. Tonight, Susan would speak of Chekhov, whose serf granddad had bought his own family's freedom. She would tell how young Anton then struggled to become a doctor, how he would use such skill to treat the poor for free. She'd confess this was part of why she depended on him so. She would admit, as a doctor's wife herself, awaiting just such a humane calling, some worthy sacrifice. She would concede that maybe her young daughter's weekly lessons in music, dressage, and ballet, maybe her husband's Sunday dawn golf clinics were, quote, our form of agnostic worship. Admitted, she'd tell them. Even this, their favorite book club, might also be another way to civically fill dry hours. Weren't we, after all, the luckiest of women, decorating time instead of claiming it? Weren't we paying secret penance for those grander starter projects we'd abandoned far too early?
Decorating time instead of claiming it. Alan Gerganus from one of the three novellas, Fear Not, in his latest work of fiction, Local Souls. And you set this in good old Falls, North Carolina. This is a place you can't leave.
I love it. You know, I think everybody remembers having an imaginary play pal when they were 3 years old. Mine was named Freddie, and he went with me everywhere, and people were always sitting on him in chairs that I thought he would occupy. Everybody else seemed sort of clumsy in comparison. Well, I've got a whole town, Frank. It's fantastic. And since I've been writing about it since 1989, I literally know the map. I have a Google map of this whole town. And the new book has end papers with my drawings of the houses of the characters and how close they are to each other. It's an extraordinary resource, and it makes the reality of the town cast real shadows for me.
You lived in New York for 12 years, and I think saw that as a promised land at one point, but now here you are back in Hillsboro.
That's right. I was one of those kids who left as soon as he could at 18. They showed me where the bus station was, and you know, I got a pair of hard shoes and went to Philadelphia to college. And I lived through being a soldier in Vietnam, a sailor in Vietnam. I lived through the AIDS pandemic in New York. I was there for the 12 crucial years of the beginning and the middle of that, and it's not ended yet. And at a certain point, I wanted to retreat. I wanted to become a hermit. And so I chose a village of 6,000 people, which reminded me somewhat of Rocky Mount, where I started. And imagine that I was just going to be an anonymous figure in the town. Well, fat chance. Life keeps pulling you out, you know, and life keeps interesting you. And you subscribe to the local paper, and before you know it, you're at town meetings, and you're hooked, and you're in a community again. And I realized that the people I had left behind in my hometown were not just taking the easy way out, that they were kind of heroic figures, that those that stayed are really holding up the universe, and that those of us who left in glory and returned were slightly selfish in our vision. And so this book I considered calling Those That Stayed, because I really feel that the kind of heroics of waiting in a carpool line to pick up your kids at 3 o'clock has never really been charted. We've talked a lot about people climbing Everest with a lot of Sherpas carrying their luggage. But I'm now considering the lives of the natives and the responsible ones.
Well, tell us about the second novella, Saints Have Mothers.
This is a story about having a child who's your ideal and the difficulties of having a child who's not one of those who's taking drugs and running with the wrong crowd, but the child who's winning national poetry contest on the subject of homelessness, the child who's getting free scholarships to go to Africa for her junior year in high school abroad, and who disappears in Africa. Her mother is a very, very intelligent and frustrated woman who's always making fun of her weight and always undercutting herself, but who is a woman of tremendous competence and talent who's never really found her way in the world. She's the single mother of 3 children. And in the absence of her daughter, the daughter's friends and the community begin to rally around this isolated person and make her feel whole again. And it's a very interesting question about the sacrifices we make as parents and the things that come to us that should and shouldn't come to us. But it was really intriguing to invent the ideal teenager and then show another aspect of her.
Will you read for us?
I will. Let me find my place here.
Finding a place in the second of 3 novellas, Saints Have Mothers. Alan Gerganis' latest is Local Souls. And you're going to be reading. It'll be at Quail Ridge Books this Thursday and St. Matthew's Episcopal Church on Friday. And you are here now to
Thank
read
you.
From your book.
This is the opening of Saints Have Mothers. My daughter often gave away my shoes. Orange rubber garden clogs, Easy Spirit flats, all migrated overnight from my bedroom to the poor. She left me standing before a closet newly purged. She left her mother, fully dressed, having finally found the car keys, innocent of owning footwear. Mm-hmm. Still, my girl was born to somebody, and they can do as they like. Us others, at our luckiest, we're with somebody. Falls, North Carolina, always told us she was one amazing little girl. No argument from Mom here. I never minded showing her off downtown. Very early, I taught her the alphabet. Neighbors warned she'd be bored in school, but as I changed her final deities, Caitlin read aloud to me. Her efficient goodness warmed, then spooked us. The first word her brother said was, "Touchdown!" But Kate, she flung out both plump arms and cried up, "Love!" Call me selfish. I would have settled for Mommy. We had a cocker spaniel she named Cookie, and the creature got very sick from eating part of a deer hit by some car. Pretty little golden dog, but with God knows what awfulness forever going into its mouth. Caitlin was 3 then, and her dad worked upstairs in his office. I'd stepped next door trying to learn cooking from my one neighbor who baked. Caitlin came rushing in. "Cookie's super sick, Mom." Crying, my girl led us to our bathroom where the poor dog was going from both ends, looking thoroughly ashamed of itself. But Caitlin, even that young, had seen all this about to happen, and to spare my needing to clean up later, she'd hoisted a fair-sized retching dog into our tub so I could just rinse dog damage down the drain. Kate, sobbing, stood patting Cookie's back curls as our neighbor waved me into the hall. At 3 years old? Are you kidding? I wouldn't have known to stick a streaming dog into the tub, and I'm 40. What your daycare lady say about her is true, Jean. She's not a baby. She's the American damn Red Cross. Unsinkable. God, Jeannie, aren't you relieved? But I was not.
Alan Gerganis, reading from Local Souls. What a wonderful passage. And the thing that strikes me about this is there's been a lot written about in fiction and nonfiction about conventional families, unconventional, the changing American family. What you do in this book is allow us to examine very conventional scenarios and understand how deeply the whole community plays a role in raising a child, whether you think the nuclear family has sole responsibility for this or not. It is whole communities that are engaged in this, and we hear their voices in the backs of our heads as we try to raise our children.
I've intentionally named my leading characters Jean and Bill and Susan. I've chose the most ordinary names for the most extraordinary people, because I think all of us are locked in this dilemma. We think that duty is all that we have. We turn up for work and we don't get any credit for being on time. We only get noticed for doing wrong. But there is a kind of dignity and a kind of power in staying home and taking care. And that's been the fascination for me of writing this book.
I have about a minute and a half left, and we haven't talked about Decoy yet, which is the third novella, and a wonderful sort of two males in a love relationship, though not particularly erotic, it may be under the surface. Tell us about those characters and just a bit about the story.
Yes, Bill Mabry is a country boy who, through a fluke of fate, moves to the richest neighborhood in Falls. His dad has always fantasized about buying a fine house in the community. And through almost a lottery win, he gets his kid into this neighborhood. And Bill never feels quite a part of the neighborhood, even though he looks like a to the manor born. He becomes fascinated with a doctor who is his doctor, who's saving his life from a heart disease. And this manifest fascination becomes a kind of love. I'm intrigued, Frank, with the friendships between straight men. I think it's a very delicate subject that a lot of straight men are too terrified to write about, but I'm not. And I'm intrigued with how, given an opportunity, they need to trust each other and they bond forever.
Powerful stuff in this book and a great examination of it all. Alan, what a pleasure, always.
Always for me, Frank. Thank
you. Alan Gergain is a writer based in Hillsboro. The latest book, Local Souls, going to be at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh Thursday, St. Matthew's Episcopal Church in Hillsboro on Friday. Thanks for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.